Terrible.
I'm Jess Hooker.
And I'm Mary Graham. This is episode 32 of the Not Terrible podcast. Today we're learning how to keep our kids safe online with the founder of the Child Rescue Network, Jeff Griesemer. Jeff shares his 20 plus years of experience with us talking about how to keep our kids safe online, how to identify when a child is being exploited, and how to address it. Not Terrible, a field guide for the hopeless optimist. Hey, today we have a guest with us, joining us via Skype. We are chatting with Jeff Griesemer, who is the founder of the Child Rescue Network, and he serves as the president of the CEO. Jeff has over 20 years of child advocate work to prevent sexual abuse. He has received training from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, the U.S. Justice Department's Office of Juvenile Justice and the Delinquency Prevention, and the Fox Valley Technical College regarding missing child case management and safety procedures. He is well-versed in missing and exploited children. We are talking with him today, just getting some of his expertise on how to keep our kids safe online. And when we say our kids, we mean all of our kids, listeners and co-hosts.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hoping that Jeff can kind of just guide us into a relationship with our children and the internet that feels good for both parties.
I think that feels, obviously the key word here is safe right now. Mm-hmm. Jeff, can I ask you how you got started in this? What in your younger years, what did you do and how did it turn into what you do today?
Sure, absolutely. First of all, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity to kind of share some of this with your audience. I got started with this. Oh my gosh. I had a 20-year career in broadcasting, so I was on the radio for 20 years.
That's why you sound so good.
And when I was in Jacksonville, Florida, on air, I met a woman who turns out her niece and nephew were missing. It was her twin sister's kids. They had been abducted by their father and were missing for 4 years when I met her.
Oh, my gosh.
We did find them a year later. They were living in the middle of the Ozark Mountains, out in the middle of nowhere, an old Winnebago, no running water, no electricity. It was just such a tragic case.
Wow.
We got the kids back when they were 8 years old and 11 years old, and they had never been to school, no medical history, no social skills. I mean, it was just a very sad and tragic story all the way around what happened to these kids. But we got them back to their mother, and that kind of got me involved with this whole issue. And then about 14 years ago, I actually started Child Rescue Network.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's
that's a heartbreaking story.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. That is a heartbreaking story. So did you continue in terms of lost and exploited children, and how did you get or incorporate internet safety into what you do today?
Well, yeah, we started out doing a couple of things. One, helping families with missing kids, but our main focus was really to educate parents and educate teachers and child advocates on a new way of thinking about how we protect our kids. Getting away from the stranger danger message of old that is quite frankly just flawed in every way, shape, or form.
Right.
First and foremost, over 90% of the time, it's not a stranger that is abusing a child. It's someone the child is familiar with. So changing that message was really a major passion of mine and a real goal of the organization. And so we came up with empowerment, not fear. So we want to empower children. We want to empower parents to give them the knowledge and the skill sets they need to make better decisions so that they can help protect themselves from predators, whether they're in the real world or the virtual one.
Okay.
Wow. That's a huge like mission.
That's a huge undertaking. Yeah. I don't, just having Mary and I both having two kids of our own, just Oh my gosh.
Sometimes just the two kids.
Yeah.
Feel a little too much.
Too much. Yeah. Feel like a lot. That's a lot. So for you to take this on and I love how you said it, also educating parents and teachers, not just parents.
Absolutely. Now this is the old "it takes a village" is very true. I mean, mm-hmm. this is everybody, whether you have kids or not. Nobody wants to see them exploited and victimized, and so everybody has to pay attention to this, and teachers are included in that as well.
Okay, Mary, do you want to start with some of the questions that that you and I sure. went over before?
So on your website, you reference a Department of Justice report that says 1 in 7 kids ages 10 to 17 have been sexually solicited online. And like, when I read that, how do I even bring that back? How do I find a healthy balance between like, well, then my kids are just never going to be online. Like, that's my extreme reaction to something, but that's not reality. So how... when we hear these horrible facts, like, how do we even ease into letting our kids into this space that feels so scary?
Well, first of all, that report was done 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's the most up-to-date we have on this type of stuff, which is just silly. But my guess is that number is probably higher than that now, just because our access to the online world has grown.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is you can't keep your kids off the internet. I mean, their school involves being online now. And so it's almost impossible to completely block your child from being on the internet, nor would I think you want to. I mean, you've got to have those skills in today's world. So how do we teach our kid? How do we make them better and safer while they're being online? And a lot of what we focus on is, yeah, you have to understand that there are some dangers out there, and there are things that you can do, and we can get the main focus is, as a parent, your number one job is to protect your kids. I mean, that's one of your main priorities is to protect your children, mm-hmm. and keep them safe. And the fact is, you can't do that yourself. I mean, you can only go so far. Your child has to be able to make informed decisions that will be good decisions for them at the time they make them. And the only way to do that is to educate them, to educate our kids, to give them the knowledge and the skill sets to deal with some of these things that might pop up with them online, and to be very open with them. And parents have to talk to the kids about what's going on, because you can't monitor them 24 hours a day. Even if you don't access at a certain time at your house, other places might. So it really is a matter of educating the children as well, and working as a team effort. It's not against them. It's both of you trying to work together to use the internet as wisely as possible.
So are there any, when you talk to parents and teachers, I'm a formally trained educator who for the last 3 years have taught online. So I understand the value. Like, I love the internet. so I don't want my kids to not be on the internet, but if I'm letting them, hold a tablet in their hands, like, what are some, do you recommend any apps, or do you have any tools that, besides the communication and the education, are there things that you know that do work well in conjunction with the relationship piece?
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't actually recommend or endorse any kind of program, monitoring program or anything like that. There are lots of them out there, and most mm-hmm. of them are pretty good, do a lot of the similar things. One thing that parents have to be aware of is are the apps that are out there and the potential dangers those apps create.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess one thing that is probably the best way to describe it and the easiest way for parents to understand is that if the ability exists to communicate through an app or whatever, a game, an online game, if the ability exists to communicate, predators are there. Because they're looking for opportunities to reach out to kids. And like I said, whether that is an app like, you know, Kik, which is notorious for letting kids text for free. Well, you don't have to be a kid to be on there. I mean, Kik is just one of them that, that has been used in several cases to victimize children. WhatsApp, you know, is another one that parents need to be aware of. GroupMe is for older teens, and that has some dangers, you know, as well as Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. You know, all of those things. If the ability exists to communicate between people, then predators are going to be there if there's children involved. That's just the way that works.
So I guess what can we teach our children to look for in predators? If we're trying to, if we can't use other apps to protect our kids from the apps that already exist, what can we teach our kids to look for in conversation that to know this is probably not safe?
Well, and first of all, you can use monitoring apps. I mean, there are things that can be helpful.
Sure.
There are things that can let you know anytime your child is online doing anything, as long as you have the right account.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah.
That's the problem, is if a child wants to, they can bypass things and make it so you aren't aware of what's going on. So the conversation really has to be with your child. And getting them to understand that the internet is a wonderful place. There's all sorts of fascinating places to discover, and you can learn about just about anything you want to learn about. But there are dangers out there, and kids don't always realize that. They've grown up with this technology, and they just kind of assume it's safe. When in reality, you know, there are certain dangers out there. So having those open lines of communication with your child, and this isn't only a help for internet, internet safety. This is safety in general, and actually strengthening families. One of the things that we encourage parents to do is we have a program called Take 15. We say take 15 minutes a day, sit down one on one, and have a conversation with your child. If you have more than one child, you have two conversations, so that they feel special, so that they are listened to, so that you can have these conversations. And if you start those conversations early in life and you're doing it on a daily basis, and it doesn't have to be about anything heavy, you know, I mean, it can be very general, just asking open-ended questions to get them in a dialogue with you on a daily basis. So they're used to telling you what's going on in their world. And if you can do that and keep those lines of communication open, when they get to those teen years where, you know, rebellion is just kind of hardwired into our system, hopefully they're still talking to you about some of these things. So, you know, you can really make sure they understand that no matter what happens, no matter what somebody says online, you're there to help them deal with it. Because predators are very, very good at creating that dialogue. And if there is a problem between parent and child, they're very good at driving that wedge even deeper so that they can become that confidant. So a lot of this really depends on a parent's open communication with the child and vice versa, so that you can really start talking about these things and get them to understand that there are dangers out there. And if something happens, you'll deal with it together. They don't have to keep it from you. That's one of the big things that predators use, especially for older kids, is you can be anybody you want to be online. So just because someone says they're a 14-year-old boy and you're a 13-year-old girl and you're communicating and you're getting all excited and you know the feelings of romance are popping up in your head and all of this and that, this could be a 40-year-old guy sitting in his basement somewhere. And many times it is. So, you know, they try to trick kids into doing stuff and building those relationships. And just like predators in the outside world, you have two different types. You have some that will immediately go to that sexual side. But most will try to groom a child. And they may take, you know, weeks, months to groom a child, to build a relationship with that child, the point where they think they can start exploiting the relationship.
Wow. This reminds me, I heard Will and Jada Smith talk about their children. And as even when they were young, they had a thing called the circle of truth or the circle of safety, something like that, where if you called a meeting in this circle, whatever you said, you could not get in trouble for. So I feel like online safety and having that dialogue, that might be a place where you could use that circle of truth and let your kids know whatever you tell me that you've experienced online, you cannot get in trouble for.
Absolutely. That's critical, because, you know, in that those numbers about the 1 in 7 kids that are 10 to 17 year old being solicited online. And we know those numbers are greater now. The big thing that parents need to understand is, in that same research, only half the kids told anybody about being solicited online. So half of them kept quiet about it. And the number one reason they gave was, I was afraid if I told them, they'd take my computer away.
Yep.
Or they'd take my phone away.
Wow.
So having those conversations where, exactly, like you said, we can talk about anything here and you're not going to get in trouble for it if you talk about it. If something's happened and maybe, you know, you did something maybe you weren't supposed to, that's okay. We'll talk about that and we'll deal with it. But getting those open lines of communication, it's really critical.
Okay, I have a question. Having a son and a daughter, are there two different ways we should approach online safety based on gender? Should I talk to my son differently than I should talk to my daughter?
I think so. I mean, you know, obviously there's differences there, and there's differences in the way the brains work as far as making those connections. So yeah, I think you do have to use some variance depending on whether you're talking to a male or female.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it's the same.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it is really, you know, sharing that those good habits online. Helping to keep them safe.
Is there statistics that lean one way or another in regards to boys and girls?
Like victims?
Yeah.
Girls are more often targeted, but boys certainly are. And sometimes boys tend to report it less often for a variety of reasons. But girls, young girls are certainly targeted more often. Both in online, you know, grooming by that single predator and by sex traffickers who also use social media to potentially lure victims.
Wow. Do you have any specific stories that you could share that where a lesson was, I mean, maybe a happy ending story that you have that can really drive home to parents and kids the dangers, and by being honest with your parents, how you can turn it around and be safe?
Yes. There's been numerous cases where these communications start and the relationship begins. And in the child's mind, this is a real relationship. This is a real person who cares about me, who understands my feelings, who I can talk to and I can relate to, and who relates to me. And as we build this relationship, at some point things start to change a little bit. And maybe it's the boy or the predator in this case, you know, saying to a girl, and this has happened many times, you know, I really like you. You know, how about sending me a picture of you and your just your bra? You know, I mean, show me, you know, just your bra or just your panties or both or whatever. And they convince someone to do that. And then they may convince them to go a little bit further and maybe, you know, show yourself topless. Well, what happens next is the conversation changes from, you know, very friendly potential boyfriend, girlfriend type to, I have these pictures of you. Now you're going to do what I tell you to do, or I'm going to send these pictures to all of your friends, to all of your family. I'm going to post them on the internet, and this is going to happen to you. And some kids get scared and do what the predator says, thinking that if they do, then the predator will stop. But the smart kids are the ones who will go to their parents and say, you know, look, this has happened. Now he's wanting me to send, you know, nude pictures or other things. And I don't know what to do. And parents can help out. They can get the police involved. They can deal with it together, as we've said before. And so that's actually a much more common scenario than most parents realize, is that fake boyfriend persona that these predators will utilize.
I feel so. We were both born in the early 80s, and sometimes, like, I'm overwhelmingly thankful that I didn't have to grow up with this, mm-hmm. because the dumb things I did as a child, if I knew that there were pictures of them, or that, like, just the idea that a kid is not going to mess up sometimes is unrealistic. So it's a lot to know. I don't think kids understand at this age what they do is permanent. Like, it doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's permanent. And even if you post a picture and then say, oh, I really shouldn't have done that, and you delete it, it's still out there. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, don't put anything out there that you would interstate.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're doing every time you post something. And you're exactly right. Kids don't understand that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it comes back to haunt them, mm-hmm. With things that they have done, photographs, pictures of, or videos of that, as mm-hmm. you said, are typical stupid kid behavior.
Yeah.
But now it could cost you a job.
Yeah. It follows you forever.
Cost you your career. So yeah, absolutely.
What's the number one fail you see with parents outside of communication or lack thereof? What's one of the biggest fails that parents can make in keeping their kids safe on the internet?
Not staying engaged with it. Mm-hmm. The internet is changing constantly, and that is a real challenge for parents. I mean, you know, you've got busy lives. You got a lot of things to go on. And one of the last things you need to do is to be researching, okay, what's the latest app I need to be aware of? So yeah, I mean, the biggest fail is really not staying engaged. And the biggest fail is that communication aspect.
Right.
Not talking to your kids about it. But yeah, secondly would be, you know, not engaging in it and keeping up to date and doing all you can to protect your kids. And sometimes that's monitoring activity. Sometimes that's, you know, having those important conversations.
Right.
I think that's a good, like, just parenting thing overall. Like, man, there's no rest. Like, mm-mm. the minute you feel comfortable or let up out of love, not like controlling, but just the minute you think things feel okay,
something's going to get thrown in there.
Yeah. And you really have to set boundaries. I mean, there should be no child, no matter what age, that is allowed to have internet access in their bedroom at night.
Yeah,
whether that's a phone or tablet or laptop, whatever the case, that should never happen. Kids need to be, you know, online. Someplace where the parents can monitor it most of the time. And that's difficult as the kids get older. But even older kids should not have unlimited access online after bedtime, because that's when so much of this stuff happens. They get online, they start talking with somebody, and you know, the parents are just completely unaware of it.
So what should be the first step if you realize that your child is being pursued on the internet and it doesn't seem like a safe relationship or a age-appropriate relationship? What's the first thing a parent should do?
Number one, stop the communication between the child and whomever And then notify the police, notify the authorities, because, I mean, this is a major crime, and it's a major priority for law enforcement to deal with these predators. So, don't hesitate to contact the police and say, hey, look, you know, my child's been communicating with this person online for a little while, and there's something wrong here, and they're asking them to do different things, and whatever the case may be. But once they cross that line, I think notifying the police, and sometimes the police can actually run a sting to nail those people. But don't hesitate to contact the authorities if you think your child is being pursued that way.
Yeah. Is there any information you should have before you go to the police? Should you have the name or the app or I guess all the information you could have, but is there anything that you absolutely need to have before you contact the police? Should you take the device to the police?
Sure. That can work. Screenshots of conversations, certainly can, you know, just in case they get deleted, you know, screenshots can help. Just building as much evidence as you can, that early on in the game, and then take that to law enforcement. Yes.
Okay. And I think it's important to remind parents, and teachers alike, anybody who can, I don't know, mold a young mind, that the police are absolutely your first stop. It's not the school. It's not the church. It's not the Boy Scouts. It's not the Girl Scouts. It's not any club or organization. It's not youth league. It's not the sports team or the coach. The very first stop is the police.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I think that sometimes people try to maybe protect their children and keep things quiet and handle things on their own, and that's a mistake. You should call law enforcement first.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we will return with our guest, Jeff Griesmer, after this. Front Room Studios is hosting its February workshop. It's an Enneagram workshop with our friend, Laura Dingman. She is from a past episode that everybody loved, wildly popular. So we are hosting her here, live in person, on February 23rd.
From 9 to noon.
From 9 to noon.
And this is a workshop good for, so you need to know your number ahead of time.
It's crucial that you know your number ahead of time.
She will not be covering like how to determine your number, or maybe you could be this number. So you need to have a pretty good idea of what your Enneagram number is. And then we're going to be spending 3 hours learning from Laura as we dig a little deeper into the Enneagram, just to be healthier versions of ourselves.
Yes. So you have plenty of time to get the book. If you didn't get it already when she was our guest, you have plenty of time now to get the book, do the homework, find out your number, and sign up.
Yep. And you can sign up at Front Room Studio New Palestine on Facebook. There'll be an Eventbrite link, and you can click our events tab and see all the things we have planned coming up in the next few weeks/months here in the studio.
Oh my gosh, and it is filling up. We have some awesome things coming up we can't wait to share with you guys.
Yeah, so you can check that out on Facebook at Front Room Studio New Palestine, and we hope to see you here soon.
All right, we're back with Jeff. We are going to finish up this second segment with just you sharing a couple more tips and safeguards that we can share with parents and teachers alike, how to keep our kids safe on the internet.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we talked about building those communication skills, and that's so helpful for whether they're, you know, on the internet or just in general, you know, building those communication skills. But a couple other things that parents can do that can help their kids both in the virtual world and the online world. Build confidence in your kids. Giving kids self-worth is so critical, because it's the predators look for those kids that have low self-esteem, that they can help, you know, that they can build up, that they can be that person for that child who has the low self-esteem. So building confidence in kids is really a great way to help them. And then, of course, we're talking about boundaries. You have to establish, as a parent, one of your roles is to help your child establish boundaries, their personal boundaries of what they will and will not do, and what they will and will not allow done to them. And so, you know, creating those boundaries is another good thing. And so you can set those lines to help a child understand what we're talking about. And for instance, you know, one of the things that the tips that we give parents, not necessarily online, but just in general, is to create a family safe list. Have a group of only 5, 6, maybe 8 people that you pretty much trust completely with your child. And that's your family's safe list. Everybody else has boundaries. Your teachers. Yeah, we want you to mind your teachers and behave in class. But if they ever do something that makes you feel uncomfortable, you tell us about it. To the boundaries of that guy in the park that has a lost puppy. Well, I'm sorry, you aren't on my safe list. You aren't on my list. I can't help you, but I have to go ask first. You know, so it really kind of helps kids make better decisions. And that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to teach them about those personal boundaries so that they know and can recognize when those boundaries are being crossed. And that certainly happens on an online world as those relationships grow and that the child is in reality being groomed. That predator will start hitting those boundaries and start to go over those boundaries to see just how far they can go. And a child who is confident enough and has the self-esteem and understands, you know, about personal boundaries and can recognize when those boundaries are being tested, a lot of times a no, I don't do that, or no, I don't keep secrets from mom or dad can stop a predator in their tracks, because they aren't looking for a confident child who stands up to them.
Right.
They're looking for a child they can control. They're looking for a child they can manipulate. They're looking for a child who they believe will keep a secret. And secrets are another thing that we talk to parents about. Secrets are a predator's best friend. And we really encourage families not to have secrets. I mean, obviously, there's things as a parent you're not going to tell your child about.
Right.
But I'm talking about, you know, secrets. And one that bugs me probably the most is that scenario of, you know, perhaps dad picking the kids up from practice and driving home and saying, okay, we're going to stop for ice cream, but your mom's not going to like that. So let's keep it our little secret. Don't tell her that we're going to do this. Because what is that saying to the kids? Mm-hmm. It's saying that there's times I can't tell my mom or dad something.
Yeah.
That I'm being told not to talk to my mom or dad about something. And it could be something as simple as ice cream, but that establishes that pattern. So we encourage parents to say to their kids, you know, we don't have secrets. Mm-hmm. So, you know, anytime anybody asks you to keep a secret, you immediately tell us about it. Because right. That's a warning sign of somebody who may be trying to do something bad. Now, if it's obviously kids have secrets in one another, you know, talking about who likes who and this sort of thing, and that's kind of innocent. But even, you know, an older child addressing a younger child is something to be aware of, because most predators start in their teen years, in their late teen years. They start having these desires. And that's when they start exploring them. And if not caught, then that can grow on and continue for their lifetimes. But really, building those open lines of communication so that your child knows they can talk to you about anything. They can talk to you about anything, and you're going to be there to help them through it. So having those open lines of communications, having a child who is confident and has a feeling of self-worth and self-esteem, and then being able to understand those personal boundaries and how to recognize when boundaries are being crossed and how to deal with that. I mean, those are things that, you know, quite honestly, will not only protect your kids from sexual predators, those are the skill sets that will make them very successful in life, you know?
Yeah.
Imagine a world where we all know how to communicate with one another. We all are confident and self-worth, and we respect each other's boundaries.
Yeah.
That would be a very nice world to be. And we can be there. It just takes changing the generation, really building our kids up.
I really have to say that I like what you said about having a list of safe people. So often we tell our kids who not to go to. No strangers, sure. Not the guy in the park. Stay away from the weirdo that sells ice cream in the truck. You know, like we tell our kids what not to do, who not to be around, but we don't often tell them who the safe people are. So I think that that's a really great point of information and something that I had never considered outside of saying mommy and daddy are safe. But who else is safe in our circle? And this is another way that we can protect our children. Who our children may think are safe isn't necessarily who's safe. So this this is where we set our kids up and say, no, we're going to do what's best for you. And these are your five safe people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And what that does, it really empowers the child. Because if you're not on that list, I have restrictions on how I can interact with you. And so it really empowers the child to not have to feel like, you know, I've got to go with this person because they're an adult, or, you know, they're an adult that I know. And, you know, but giving them that out, giving them that list and saying, you know, these people, if they tell you to do something, you can do it. And they have your best interest at heart. But everybody else has boundaries, and you can help your kids establish what those boundaries are. But for most cases, it's, you know, I can't interact with you until I talk to my parents about it. And that's just really a great way to empower kids to help them make the best decisions possible.
I'd like to touch on one more thing that you said. You were talking about the older child, younger child scenario. I think that there is a lot of gray area here with children exploring each other's bodies or being curious and or them being victimized. What is the age range? What's the years that they say should be between two children before it's just kids being curious and it's actually a predator and victim situation?
Well, believe it or not, you can have predators very, very young. I mean, you hate to call them predators because they aren't really. And in most cases, they have been victimized themselves.
Right.
You know, we have you know, preschool students who have been victimized by other preschool students. And in reality, it was that child who did the victimizing was also being victimized, being exposed to pornography and had seen these things. And so he was just kind of behaving the way he'd seen act out at home. The real predator mind usually kicks in, you know, that 15, 16, 17 type range. And normally it's not a similar age that they victimize. It's a younger age. And sometimes it's just that older child who is curious and things get out of hand, and things go too far, you know, and sometimes it's the beginning of a potential lifetime of being a sexual predator.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times that starts in early years, and if not caught and treated, can become, you know, a lifetime event. And a sexual predator, if they are not caught, estimates are that they will impact up to 75 children.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
Yeah. And then some, many, many more. And of course, lots of us as well. But it's a huge problem. And, you know, you hate to scare people about it because the world is a pretty good place. Most people are good. Most people would never harm a child. They do anything they could to help a child.
Mm-hmm.
But there are those out there who are predators that we do have to be careful of. And we do have to be aware of their existence and do what we need to do to help protect our kids.
My daughter recently came home with a little sheet of paper, and I don't know how often the school counselor comes and does like little mental health chats and stuff with the class, but she had written on a piece of paper, adults that make me feel safe, people that I know are safe, like, and she had this whole big list of like different categories that the counselor had walked them through in school. So they're having these conversations, at least at some schools. And yeah. It felt good to see that the list I would have made for my daughter is the same one that she made for herself, where even though we haven't explicitly sat down and made that list, we have in the past couple years, just from things happening in our family, talked about who's safe and who's not safe. And she was able to see, kind of put that into practice and say, these, I know that these are the safe adults. That was, and she's in fourth grade. So we're, I think, hopefully heading in the right direction in schools and talking about things absolutely. That maybe we didn't when our age were in school.
Absolutely. Yeah. Schools are getting much better at it. But parents have to get much better at it too. And one of the conversations has to be sex education. I mean, it has to be sex education. Mm-hmm. And it has to start much earlier than you think it should. I mean, a child, a three-year-old, can understand that the parts covered by the parts of the body covered by the bathing suit are private parts and nobody needs to be messing with them. It doesn't need to go any further than that. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a pretty basic thing, but they need to understand that. Kids need to understand as they age and can you know, absorb this stuff. The kids need to understand how their bodies work mm-hmm. and how the opposite sex's bodies work. Because predators look for that naive child that don't understand how things operate. And they can make a child feel like it's their idea, because one of the things about sexual abuse that is sometimes more challenging is sometimes the abuse can feel good, you know?
Yeah.
And if it's someone that the child knows, which you know, 92% of the time it is, and sometimes it's a family member about 40% of the time. So this is someone that the child loves and trusts. And if they're at a young age and someone is attempting these things and they do it in a slow manner, it gets confusing to the child because they don't understand that this isn't right. And as I said, it can feel at times, you know, that it can feel good. And so that really gets confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really why it is so damaging and so, I mean, it just destroys lives when some of this stuff happens, because it is that trust that is broken.
Mm-hmm. As a mother of a child with special needs, and knowing how much more they are preyed upon, my daughter is 13 and operates at about a 5 or 6 year old level. Do you have any tips for parents with high or special needs children and how they can protect them?
It's a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. And as you are well aware, I'm sure. And it depends on the needs of the child, you know, as far as where they appear on the spectrum and this sort of thing.
Sure.
And so, you know, it varies widely. But I think really having the conversation as simply as possible about those safe people mm-hmm. and that, you know, anybody else, you know, you have to come check with me.
Right.
Is one way mm-hmm. that can help and keeping it as simple as possible mm-hmm. so that they can make that decision quickly and not be so easily tricked and lured. Mm-hmm. But that's a challenge. That's an ongoing challenge. And we're actually trying to work with some autism groups to see if there are ways that we can figure out how to adapt some of our programs, you know, even more specifically in that area.
Yeah. I think that if I could just share a tip that I would use, you can use this with special needs children and younger children, having a photo album of your safe people, not just the names, but the pictures of your safe people, I think is huge. 'Cause a lot of times we have memory issues with our condition and forgetting, you know, that this is home and this is mom and this is dad and these people are safe. I think using photos as opposed to lists are also helpful sometimes.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, is there anything else that you would like to close on or drive home one more time? I feel like this has been really informative, and we're so grateful for your time. I've learned so much personally. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the word of the episode is communication.
Yes, it really is. And it's something that it's kind of almost awkward to say it in this world we live in today, but it's communication is becoming less of a
skill.
Almost seems like it's being used less than what it should be. But that's the biggest part in keeping kids safe is those open lines of communication and making sure your child knows that they can talk to you about anything at any time, and you're going to help them through it. There may be consequences, but I'm not going to get mad at you if you tell me what's been going on. We're going to talk about it. We're going to deal with it, and then we'll go from there. So I really think having those open lines of communication will really go so far in protecting kids. Staying engaged and staying up to date is another real key need. And I think really, there's a lot of doom and gloom, and even it's a tough subject sometimes, but it's a subject that has to be talked about. And the fact, like I said before, most people are good. Most people would never harm a child. They'd do anything they could to help a child. And sometimes we put so much fear into our kids that I think it has lasting effects if we aren't careful. We have to keep them open to the world around them and just figure out the way to do it in as safely as possible. But the online world is a wonderful place, and there's fascinating things that kids can learn and do and interact with. And it just has some dangers that parents have to be aware of, and the kids have to be aware of as well.
Okay, Jeff, if anybody would like to get a hold of you or read more about you and what you do, where can they go?
Well, our website has a lot of great resources on it, childrescuenetwork.org. I really encourage you to follow us on our Facebook page, which is Facebook/Child Rescue Network. We post daily various tips, some parenting tips. We have just ways to make life easier, stories that are interesting, articles that parents should be aware of. We do a lot of mental health things that we post online because that boils down to everything. Mm-hmm. So I really would love folks to go to our website. They can sign up for our newsletter there and follow us on Facebook and Twitter as well.
Great. Jeff, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. And maybe we'll touch base again in a couple of months with more questions and get your expertise. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Anytime. Jess and Mary, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity to raise awareness.
Okay, bye-bye. That was Jeff Griesmer, and wow, that was a lot of information. I feel like I took a lot of notes.
Yeah.
I don't take a lot of notes during an episode, but so much to learn and so much to apply. Things that I didn't consider, even though I think that I have an active relationship. Mm-hmm. But, just the little things that we say to our kids and the time that we don't take and how much danger that can put them in.
Right. Yeah. I think if you listen to all of that and you feel overwhelmed, I think it's good to take for now one piece of advice and kind of work that into your daily routine, the kind of like the take 15 that Jeff said, and maybe start there. And then come back and listen again and take another piece of advice. Because I will tell you, sometimes I feel so overwhelmed with the things that I really have no control over when I want to keep my kids safe. Mm-hmm. So when I feel like there's too much to do, little bites of that make things, less heavy for me.
Yeah, I think that I'm a list maker, and sometimes I have to fold the list to where I can only see one or two points and go, okay, we're going to concentrate on this right now. Are you up for a not terrible? I feel like we need a not terrible after that episode.
Yeah, we can do.
Okay. he said some things that reminded me of parenting skills I've learned from many parenting books, and also, you know, our guru, Lisa, who is our therapist, that you should never stop talking about anything. There's nothing you should stop talking about. And having teenagers and being aware of their growing relationships and you know, the older your kids get, the less you know everybody in their circle.
Yeah.
And that's scary. And it's always been very scary for me in terms of sleepovers and those kinds of things, just keeping that aware. So I always had a list of things that I would go through with Max before and after he was somewhere. And we had three safe places that he was allowed to spend the night. Parents that we knew that we were comfortable with. And it's kind of rotated and changed as he's grown up, obviously, and his friends have changed. But I remember doing this, and I don't do it anymore. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to do that again, because I remember how much better I felt before and after checking in during sleepovers. And I know that's my not terrible is that I'm going to go back to doing that, because he's gone so much more now too. Addie doesn't do sleepovers, so that's not something that we do with her. But yeah, that I just need to go back to those five questions, and I know he's going to roll his eyes so hard they're probably going to pop out of his head, but I don't care.
No.
I feel so empowered right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. So when we moved to the country, this tells you a little bit about how my brain works. I realized how many more guns were in the homes of the children that my kids were friends with, mm-hmm. and like, just actively having conversations with my girls about like, hey, we don't play around guns. We don't go anywhere where kids are holding guns. And I'm almost to the point where I will start asking a parent where their guns are mm-hmm. in the home before my kids go there.
Yeah.
And that's not online safety, but just safety of like, those safety are the things I think about when my kid goes to someone's house, because they only go to houses where I for sure would feel safe,
mm-hmm.
feel they're safe. But I also want that gun conversation.
I think that that's another relationship piece. I think that that applies to the safety aspect of this, is that having that conversation with your child, were there any guns in the house? Did you see any drugs being done?
Mm-hmm.
Was anybody intoxicated or acting strange?
Did you see any violence?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just questions that you have to be aware of. And having that dialogue with your children also sets them up to know what to look for
mm-hmm.
when they go somewhere and go, hey, I know that this isn't a safe place to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our Not Terrible is talk to your children.
Our Not Terrible is kind of depressing.
It is kind of depressing, but I think that it's just safety in general. It's not mm-hmm. online safety, but it's just like, we can start with online safety, because that is something that is in our everyday lives all the time. But then we need to consider when our kids do stop staring at a screen mm-hmm. and do leave the house and do interact with their friends and their friends' families, that those are places we have to keep relationships safe as well.
So since you're Not Terrible, it's kind of depressing. I'm going to follow your lead.
Okay.
when Jeff talked about safe adults don't ask children to keep secrets, we had an issue with that with my daughters. An adult that we thought was safe asked my children to keep a secret, and it wasn't anything sexual, mm-hmm. but it was something that would have put them in harm's way, and the adult told Ellie not to tell mommy and daddy that that happened. And it didn't come out right away. Ellie didn't tell me. She was four. And eventually, a couple months later, she told me while we were driving one day that someone had, this person had asked her to keep a secret. So I kept things light. And I just mm-hmm. said, oh no, what was that? And we had...
That was a rough one.
We had some conversations. Yeah. So that adult is no longer in our lives. That adult isn't safe. And we talked then with our four-year-old about how that's not appropriate. Keeping secrets, if it's a surprise for Christmas present, mm-hmm. is okay in our house.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing else is really a secret, and that's not, we don't do secrets, and I would rather you tell me everything and ruin a surprise than keep something from me that you've been told not to. So
that's hard. And in teaching kids the difference between a surprise and a secret, a surprise we'll all eventually know.
Yes.
A secret you're supposed to keep forever.
Right. And that's,
we
a
don't
good,
want that.
That's
yeah.
a, that's good language for that. So we, that's a whole other episode for that. But so we, we have had that already come up in our lives and addressed it. And
good
so we
you.
Talk about it all the time now, not that same incident because I don't want to keep bringing that up, but we do often
using
talk about,
lesson,
we don't keep secrets.
Yeah.
Anything, any adult that's safe wouldn't ask you to ever keep a secret. And we've done a lot of just through counseling and the stuff that that's gone on in our marriage and with Chris, working through some of the things that happened to him in his childhood, me being aware of them and changing the language or the things that we're doing with our kids because of the things that happened to Chris, because he didn't have anyone safe in his life.
Yeah. We've run into the secret situation in terms of maybe a paper didn't get turned in on time, and oh my gosh, okay, you're going to turn it in, and I'm not going to tell your dad that you didn't turn it in.
Mm-hmm.
And living two different households, that lends itself for that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Things that happen on John's clock and things that happen on my clock and me going, well, I'm just going to handle this.
Mm-hmm.
No, because that's still, regardless
it's
if we're
up.
Yeah, regardless if we're together or not, if we're living in the same household or not, that is reminding my kids that somehow we're divided and we're going to keep secrets from our parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a reminder too. Not only do I have to have a conversation with my kids again, I have to have a conversation with John again saying that's not going to happen.
Because our kids are smart enough to see that, and it will come back to bite us in the butt later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've kept secrets from each other, and that didn't serve us.
No.
So let's not do this to our family as well. So even families that are in you know what, I have to say, I don't like to say broken homes.
You're not broken.
No, I'm not broken. Our home is just, what's the word I have these? We franchised. We have two locations. So even if you are a franchised family, then still, like, start there. Like, with a healthy relationship is that, hey, we're not going to keep secrets from each other. We're going to do this. Don't divide your family more with that. Man, I feel like I could talk about this. I know you can see, my body language is even like, let's get it on. No. So our not terribles are actually learning experiences and ways to apply what
like
Jeff
take
said
away
to
lessons.
Us. Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. We will catch you guys on the next episode.
All right. We'll see you next week, guys. Keep reading Everything Happens for a Reason by Kate Bowler. We're getting close to our book talk, so grab a copy of that book and get started so you can join us in the discussion.
You have been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Not Terrible Podcast. Visit us at notterriblepodcast.com for show notes and additional content. You can sign up for our newsletter for bonus episodes and podcast extras. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast provider.
When you subscribe, leave us a review. We'd love to share it on the podcast, like this Facebook review from Annie W., who writes, "I love this podcast. Every week, these ladies are raw and real. It gets down to the crevices. The rest of us are too afraid to venture."
Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with the Off the Air podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studios, this has been a Waco production.